Section 3. Louisiana enters the 20th century. As you read, look for how reformers in the progressive movement attempted to improve life in Louisiana. The economic benefits of lumber and oil, new forms of pleasure that arrive with the new century, the contributions of Louisiana's jazz musicians to the nation and the world. Terms, progressive movement, suffrage, scrip. As Louisiana entered the 20th century, the state and its people faced many challenges. Most people still live in rural areas where modern conveniences were unknown and decent roads were 30 years in the future. New Orleans was by far the state's largest city. While rural areas remain remote and life went on much as it had throughout the 19th century, some small areas of progress were made. Issues like lack of passable roads, poor drainage, and primitive water supplies often went unchallenged in rural areas. In a city the size of New Orleans, where more than 200,000 people lived close together, issues like these were not only a nuisance but actually dangerous. In order to meet these challenges, some citizens adopted a set of reforming ideas that went under the description of progressivism. Progressive reformers. The progressive movement had many facets, but in general terms, progressives believe government could and should be used to help address social problems like poverty, illiteracy, and improving the conditions for all workers. Progressives opposed the kind of politics practiced by the New Orleans Ring, which was dominated by ward bosses who had little or no education but who controlled votes with promises of jobs. Progressive reformers argued that those elected to office should have specialized qualifications like degrees in law, accounting, or engineering. Sisters Jean and Kate Gordon were prominent Louisiana progressives. Jean devoted much of her energy to convincing the state legislature to provide protections for child laborers. Her efforts led to the state's first child labor law, which was passed in 1906 and strengthened 2 years later. She even served without pay as a factory inspector to make sure the laws were enforced. She was also committed to solving the social problems she believed contributed to the delinquency of young women. Jean's sister Kate devoted much of her energy to the campaign to secure voting rights for women. The state's 1898 Constitution provided a small measure of suffrage, the right to vote, for property-owning women who paid taxes to the state. Using this stipulation, Kate led a drive to get a series of improvements to the New Orleans sewerage and drainage systems on the ballot. As a progressive, she believed these improvements would reduce flooding and slow down the spread of disease. She led a successful public campaign for the measures, and newspapers actually gave the Gordon sisters and other members of the Women's League for Sewerage and Drainage credit for the victory. Kate devoted the next 20 years to expanding and guaranteeing women the right to vote. Kate was a progressive, but like many Southern progressives, she was also a white supremacist. As such, she believed women's suffrage should be guaranteed by state rather than federal legislation. Thus, she opposed the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which gave all adult women the right to vote, in part because she feared African American women would insist on their right to vote as well. Progressive governors. Early 20th century governors also agreed with some of the progressives' ideas about the use of government to better society, to ensure more humane treatment for the most vulnerable, and to increase government efficiency. Like Nichols and Foster in the 1890s, the governors in the first two decades of the new century believed in white supremacy, but also sought to improve the quality of life and the state's reputation. Governor William Hurd was trained as an accountant and worked to improve the state's financial reporting systems. He also sought to expand educational opportunities. The next two governors, Newton Blanchard and Jared Sanders, were both trained as lawyers. Blanchard sought to improve conditions for the state's prisoners and was the first to create a juvenile justice system designed to separate child and adult prisoners. Sanders was the first governor to impose a small tax charged to companies that profited from extracting the state's timber and petroleum resources. Lumber and oil. The extraction and processing of the state's timber became a big business in the post-Civil War era. Lumber mills in southern Louisiana processed the huge cypress trees that skilled lumbermen harvested from the swamps in the southern part of the state. In the forests north of Lake Pontchartrain and in the vicinity of Shreveport, pine was the main kind of tree harvested. Large lumber mills were spread around the state. A man named George Lote had a lumber company in New Orleans that processed timber, but also sold the plans and pre-cut lumber that a purchaser could use to quickly build a home. Lumbering jobs were plentiful in the years between 1880 and 1920. The pay was good, but the jobs were dangerous. Because lumber workers often lived in company-run camps in rural areas, they too were often forced to buy high-priced goods on credit from company stores. In fact, some lumber companies paid their workers in scrip, a kind of currency that could only be used in stores run by the lumber companies themselves. New opportunities were created after the state's first oil field came in near Jennings in 1901. For the first time, many people who had only done agricultural labor had the chance to try something new. Like lumbering, working in the oil fields could be dangerous and sometimes deadly work. The pay made their risks worth it for many. Men traveled to and lived in camps or tent settlements around oil wells. These rough camps quickly gave way to industrial development. Corporations like Standard Oil came to the state and built plants to refine the oil. They also built pipelines to transport the refined oil to other parts of the state and nation. Standard Oil built a pipeline that carried the state's crude oil from its northwest corner over to Baton Rouge, where the refinery was processing more than 7,000 barrels of oil a day by 1911. In the course of oil exploration, many wells also produced natural gas. The gas was considered worthless at first, and many companies allowed it to burn off. Over time, the value of natural gas also became clear, and it, too, was piped to other parts of the state and country. A major natural gas field was discovered near Monroe in 1916. The pursuit of pleasure. As the 1920s approached, the state was impacted by widespread changes in American culture. People in Louisiana, and especially New Orleans, had long had a reputation for knowing how to enjoy life. But the idea of having specific leisure time in the evenings and on weekends was just entering the mainstream. In part, this was because progressive reformers had worked to make shorter work days and free weekends the norm for many workers. New ways to shop. The idea of enjoying yourself by buying consumer goods was also entering the mainstream. Even in the state's most rural communities, the arrival by mail of a catalog from Montgomery Ward or Sears Roebuck & Company allowed rural people to buy, or at least dream about buying, fashionable clothes and modern tools and farming equipment. In New Orleans, Canal Street became a destination for shoppers from other parts of the state who came by train to shop in the city's sprawling new department stores. Electric lights also began to appear in stores and restaurants and on major thoroughfares, expanding shopping and leisure hours into the evening. The rise of the automobile. Although the roads in Louisiana remained abysmal, extremely poor, until the early 1930s, automobiles became a more common sight, particularly on city streets. In response, the state began to regulate automobiles and, by 1915, required drivers to have licenses. Even people with modest incomes began to purchase cars when inventor Henry Ford introduced his Model T automobile in 1908. Ford used innovative assembly lines that brought down the time and cost it took to build a car. Americans could also purchase Ford's cars on a credit plan, making it easier to pay for the automobile over time. Trains and streetcars. Most people, however, still relied on trains for travel between cities. Although Louisiana's railroads developed later than some other states, by the early 20th century, approximately 5,000 miles of track connected all parts of the state. In Shreveport and New Orleans, horse-drawn carriages and streetcars were replaced by electronic-powered ones in 1893 and 1898, respectively. The birth of jazz. A new and original American musical form was born in Louisiana during this period. Played mostly in disreputable New Orleans bars and honky-tonks at first, these loud, lively, and unusual sounds came to define a form of music known as jazz. By the 1920s, jazz had entered the mainstream, and people listened and danced to jazz bands at private dances and on riverboats that traveled up and down the Mississippi River. As some early jazz musicians, many of whom were African-American, left the state to seek better opportunities in a life free of Jim Crow laws, they took jazz with them and spread it to the rest of the nation and the world. One of the most famous was Louis Armstrong. After learning to play the cornet, an instrument similar to a trumpet, in a juvenile detention facility, Armstrong became one of the pioneers of American jazz. By the time of his death, Armstrong had become a world ambassador for the music he and common people like himself had helped to create in Louisiana in the first two decades of the 20th century. As Louisiana entered the 1920s, the state's inhabitants remained concentrated in rural areas. While cities were modernizing, development of roads and public facilities lagged behind other places in the nation. Louisiana was entering a new era, but the state had not yet entered the modern age. In this time of great changes, the state's people and leaders faced both challenges and opportunities. One man in particular would meet those challenges head on. It is to his life and the ways in which he changed Louisiana that we now turn. Special feature: Louisiana in World War I. Working on farms and factories, in shops or at trades, or even home from college, most of Louisiana's young men would not have understood how events of June 28, 1914 would affect their lives. On that day, more than 5,500 miles away, Archduke Franz Ferdinand of Austria-Hungary and his wife were assassinated while visiting Sarajevo, capital city of the Austro-Hungarian province of Bosnia. The brutal killing outraged many in Europe. Tensions grew throughout the summer, and by August, Louisiana's newspapers began to warn that war threatened to engulf Europe, and it did. Country after country chose sides, and what became known as the Great War swept across Europe. France, the United Kingdom, and Russia led the Allied powers, while Germany, Austria-Hungary, and the Ottoman Empire led the Central powers. Louisiana enjoyed an economic boom throughout the war years, supplying the warring countries with goods. Cotton tripled in price, and sugar's price doubled. The timber and petroleum industries experienced great gains. The average worker's pay increased to between $1.50 and $2 a day. On April 6, 1917, the United States officially joined the Allied powers. Louisiana, like the rest of the United States, supported the war effort by sending troops and raising money through campaigns. Louisiana sent over 71,000 officers and enlisted men to the war. 11 major military installations in Louisiana were either constructed or expanded. The largest of these was Camp Beauregard, located north of Alexandria. The federal government also invested in the infrastructure of New Orleans with the construction of three new shipyards, a multi-million-dollar repair yard, and a massive warehousing terminal. The war led to changes within Louisiana on the home front. With so many of the nation's young men enlisting in the armed forces, factories in Detroit, St. Louis, Chicago, and other northern cities faced a shortage of workers. Factories began to attract African-American workers from Louisiana with the promise of higher wages, signing bonuses, and the lack of Jim Crow laws. This led to the Great Migration of African-Americans from Louisiana to northern cities. The war ended on November 11, 1918. More than 116,000 American soldiers gave their lives. 1,447 of those soldiers were from Louisiana. Throughout Louisiana today, you can find memorials to the fallen. The citizens of the Ninth Ward in New Orleans erected the Victory Arch at McCarty Square in 1919 to honor those who served and died. The Memorial Tower at LSU, also known as the Campanile, was built in 1923 by the American Legion as a memorial to all Louisianians who gave their lives in what was later known as World War I. To learn more about World War I, you can visit the Louisiana State Museum. What do you think was the greatest impact of World War I on Louisiana? Special feature: Louis Armstrong and jazz. Louis Armstrong was one of the creators of jazz music and one of the most famous people to call New Orleans home. Armstrong was born on August 4, 1901, in New Orleans. Growing up, Armstrong heard many different types of music, such as blues, ragtime, military parade music, and spirituals. He would eventually blend these together to produce jazz music. Armstrong began working at age 11 doing odd jobs like selling newspapers or cleaning graves. He also began singing on the street for tips around this time. About a year later, Armstrong was arrested for firing a pistol into the air. He was sent to the Colored Waifs Home for Boys, where he would live for a year and a half. During this time, he was taught to play the cornet and to read music. This set the stage for his rise to prominence in the jazz music world. After leaving the home, Armstrong began playing in small clubs, at funerals, and on riverboats. In 1922, Joseph King Oliver invited Armstrong, just 21 years old, to join his band in Chicago. Armstrong would record his first song with Oliver's band in 1923. Between 1925 and 1928, Armstrong recorded songs with two different bands, the Hot Fives and the Hot Sevens. These were the defining recordings for New Orleans jazz. One of Armstrong's most famous recordings, Ain't Misbehavin', made in 1929, launched jazz music into the world spotlight. Throughout the rest of his life, Armstrong would perform, make recordings, and even appear in movies. He died on July 6, 1971. Though Armstrong's childhood home no longer exists, Louis Armstrong Park, near the French Quarter in New Orleans, was founded in 1980 to honor the musician. If you are interested in learning more about Louis Armstrong, you should plan a visit to the Old U.S. Mint in New Orleans, which is one of the sites of the Louisiana State Museum. Their collection includes hundreds of Armstrong's letters and recordings, his first cornet, and even the famous handkerchief that he used for wiping sweat off his forehead when performing. Do you think New Orleans jazz would have developed if Louis Armstrong had never been taught how to play the cornet?